anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's Pat and Wes along with you on this Wednesday, September 4th. Thanks for being along with us on Flames Talk. And continuing to honor and remember and just do the best job we can to honor the lives of Matt and John Gaudreau, who we know were taken from us and taken from the hockey world and taken from their family and their friends far too early on Thursday evening. And very, very thankful that this next gentleman is able to join us for a little bit. A little more than 10 years ago, took over as general manager of the Calgary Flames and is now entering his second year as GM of the Toronto Maple Leafs. But in this context, just a friend of the Gaudreaus, as we say hello to Brad Treliving, who joins us on the program. Brad, it's Pat and Wes. It's good to talk to you, Tree. How you holding up, all things considering?
Well, thanks for having me on, guys. Wish it was under different circumstances, as we all do, but it's been tough. You know, it's been tough, and I know what the city of Calgary and the fans of the Flames and just the people of Calgary thought of Johnny. So I can only imagine how everybody's doing there. But it's this is a tough one.
It's been pretty incredible to see, Tree, the response of the hockey world, you know, the steps on the Saddle Dome here, the growing memorial and you know, two candlelight vigils on this Wednesday night in Calgary and Columbus. I guess we shouldn't be surprised, but boy, it sure does speak to the impact that family has had on the hockey world, doesn't it?
It does. And not surprising for those of us that knew them. To know Johnny was to know his family. You know, that was, you know, like I said, we used to joke, you know, all families are close, but this was, you know, when you got John, you got the crew, and they fell in love with Calgary. Calgary fell in love with them. You know, I know we joked with John a couple of times near the end, you know, and I guess the last few years when I think Guy and Jane are doing as much media as John was. And, you know, and so, yeah, they're, you know, that's just, you know, what has it been now? I don't know how many days it's been, but you just catch yourself, you know, you just think about them and, you know, everybody that's got kids or family or mothers and dads, you can't even begin to process what that family's going through. But they are a special family, and they touched a lot of people, and so this outpouring of love and support is, you know, certainly deserving, but not surprising knowing how many friends they made along the way here.
Brad, it was a little more than a decade ago that you made Calgary home and took over as GM of this team in I guess late April, early May 2014. At that point, Johnny had played just the one game in the NHL. Like, can you reflect on, as you look back to when you took over as GM here in Calgary, what did you know at that time about, you know, this guy who had just signed an NHL contract after three great years in college? Like, what were your initial thoughts of John when you took over the team a decade ago?
Well, I mean, I'd done a lot of scouting, you know, in my previous job in Arizona. So you knew who John, you know, was. He had just finished a great career at Boston College. I think that year he'd won with Dobie Baker. And so you knew he had this wonderful talent, but, you know, I'll be honest. The question, okay, he's done it at college. Is he going to be able to make that step? You know, at his size, is he going to be able to play pro, and is he going to be able to make it? But is he certainly, you know, he's not going to be able to do it right away. You know, that was always the thought is, you know, he's going to need some time. You know, he had special talent. But I'd be lying to you if I said, you know, okay, yeah, we knew he was going to come in and be the player he was. Really didn't. And, you know, I've been talking to a lot of guys, obviously, over the last little bit. And, I mean, I remember that first year, you know, a lot of people don't remember. You guys followed the team. You know, we opened that year against Vancouver at home. We lost against Vancouver. We went to Edmonton, won in Edmonton. And then we went on a road trip. That was the start of a road trip. And I remember he got sat out. I remember talking to Bob Hartley, you know, he had a great rookie camp, a rookie tournament in Penticton, mm-hmm. you know, and he's just trying to find his way. Right? He sat out in Columbus. We had two games left in road trip. He sat out in Columbus. And I remember the discussions. We were like, okay, does he need time in the minors? Like, let's just give him a breath. Does he need time in the minors? And we're like, well, let's just, you know, Bob was saying, let's give him a break here. And we said, okay, we'll give him a break. And it wasn't like his play was bad. It's just, he's a young guy. And then he jumped in the lineup the last game of the road trip in Winnipeg. And I remember vividly the goal. The rest is history, as they say, right? So, long way of saying tremendous talent, but to think that we knew or I knew what he was going to be at that would be false. And he just kept doing what he always did, just proving everybody wrong.
Brad, I'm only going to jump ahead about a month or month and a half from what you were just talking about, because I've talked so much about one specific game in the past few days, and I'm sure you won't need much prompting. What do you remember about that night just before Christmas in Los Angeles?
Oh, yeah. Well, we were down, right? We were down. They had just won the cup, right? Or that was their cup year. They just won the cup. And we were down, and he gets the hat trick, right? And scores the first one, I think he's on a breakaway, and then he has the one where he banks in off Doughty, I think it was.
Right.
Right? And then scores the winner in overtime. And it's funny the things you remember. You guys all remember too, Johnny. The guy was—he could undress faster than anybody I knew. There's nights that by the time I got down from the press box, he was already dressed. And I remember him as the Staples Center, going down the Staples Center that right by the Zambonis. I was walking down, and he's running by me already in a suit because he's getting a driver to go to the airport because it was the last game before Christmas.
Yeah,
and he was flying home. You know, he was flying home for Christmas, and I think we had lost eight straight before that game, and that broke the string.
Just lost in Vancouver the night prior. I remember that, and
we scored on our own net. If you remember that night,
I do. that was the 1-0 goal. Then you came back, and then I think Tanny. Chris Tanev scored the OT winner for Vancouver that night to make it eight in a row. And then nine straight going into the Christmas break, and Johnny was having none of it. It's funny, Tree. You know, that first season for you was John's first season in the league. It was such a special season in this city. It had broken a 5-year drought of not making the playoffs, and you had the group did it in such like crazy ways. We all remember the comebacks and the improbable nature of it, so on and so forth. How much, like, that's a rookie season for a player. That's a rookie season as GM for you. That's a pretty cool way to come into the league at that level together, isn't it?
Yeah, that group was a neat group, and there wasn't, as you guys knew, we were trying to reboot the reboot the team and we're trying to get these young players in and see what we had and it was like you said, it was a building year for Johnny, right? He kind of had that start, and by the end of the year, had become such a, like, just an electrifying player. And him and Sean and the chemistry they had, it was something else. It was an improbable year. I remember Ken King summed that season up best when he says it's like shooting a 3-under round of golf, but you sunk 18 40-foot putts. And it was one of those years. There's the comebacks, but at the center of it all was sort of the coming out party for John, right? And it was funny. Like, I remember watching him in, I guess his rookie camp. And then the early part of the season, because you get asked a lot in the last few days, like, just we're all BSing on stories, and everybody talks about his size, but it was probably, I don't know, a 10 games through, 15 games through that season, 20 games through that season. I never worried about his size. Like, he first came in, you're like, oh, geez, you're worried, and rookie camp, is he going to get hit? And the first times he's playing against NHLers, but then, probably around Christmas time, you're like, he never really, he got the odd one, but he just knew how to sort of navigate his way around and go into these traffic pileups and come up with the puck. And so you never worried about him that way. Mm-hmm. He knew how to navigate himself around this. But it was a fun year, and he was right at the front of the bus of it.
Brad Treliving is with us here on Flames Talk on this Wednesday afternoon. It's Pat and Wes along with you too.
Brad, I've asked this same question to a few people in the past few days, and I'll throw it toward you. I feel like everyone who becomes a superstar in the sport of hockey or in any sport, like, there's one specific thing that maybe sets them apart. And we watched Johnny Gaudreau in Calgary blossom into, a legitimate superstar. For you, what was the secret sauce there? What was it that made Johnny different?
Well, I think his brain. He's smarter than everybody. He saw the game. His brain, his vision, he saw it earlier, faster. He just saw it better than everybody, right? It happened. It was happening in his mind in slow motion. So he just had elite hockey sense, and his skill. Obviously, he's so skilled. But what's so underappreciated by people, other than the ones that are around him, is his competitiveness. He's a competitor. Like, an ultimate competitor. He hated to lose. He hated not to have success. He was wildly competitive. But he just saw, as those great players do, he just saw it at a different level. His ability, you guys saw it. How many times did we see it where he's just, that player, he'd find somebody, and you're wondering if he sees the guy over here, and it's easy for us sitting up top looking at it, and he did. Just on 3-on-3. Remember the run he went on 3-on-3. He's got to be one of the best 3-on-3 players ever. It's when 3-on-3 came into the league, it was just set up for him. But
yeah,
so many times I can't remember how many times he'd get a 2-on-1, and you're like, okay, it's over. he was gonna make a play or shoot it in the net, but I think just that combination he had of just his skill was world class, but his elite hockey sense and his competitiveness drove him.
Brad, you would have witnessed this thousands of times, like when a young fan was lucky enough to get a access past the Flames locker room. Like, you didn't have to ask them who they wanted to meet. They were there to get an autograph from Johnny Gaudreau. When you walked out of the team hotel on the road and you saw someone standing with a hockey card and a Sharpie, you didn't have to ask them who they were looking for. It was going to be Johnny. I'm curious, how did you see him kind of handle stardom?
Well, he was just so down to earth. You know, I really, you know, you reflect on all this stuff, but, you know, I, like Pat was saying, when we arrived at the same time, but, you know, he was there before me. He had come at the end of the year before, but, you know, we kind of started that first year, and he was, you know, he looked like he was 10. And he was, you know, he was very shy. He was very, you know, and then one of the things you're around this long enough, you see these guys grow up. Right? They're like your own kids. And by the time he left Calgary, you guys probably, I'm sure you guys seen it in the media. You know, he was this man. He was getting married. He was ready to start a family. He was so much more comfortable around, you know, around the media. But I mean, he was beloved from day one. But he was just always just the unassuming. Like, there was no ego with him. You know, you'd never know who the superstar is, because he was wearing, whether it was July, middle of June, or the dead of winter, he had a toucan.
It drove his mom crazy, didn't it?
Oh my God, he wore this toque, and he'd have sweatpants from probably Pee Wee that he would wear. And he'd wear, you know, he looked like he might be living on the street. And, but that was John. He was just unassuming. He had time for everybody. That was John. Like, there was no ego, you know, that was him. So he was, you know, he always treated people with first class, and, you know, I know times, like, my kids were big John fans, and, you know, he, on their birthdays, you know, they always got a message and a note, and that was him. You know, all the stuff that you don't see and hear about, but just a real, real down-to-earth, unassuming guy. You know, there was no ego, there was no, you know, there was no fancy to him. But he was loved, like I said, that from the moment, that team in 14-15, he was loved by those guys. Like, they'd give him a hard time, all in jest, but like, they were, you know, he was like their little brother.
Were you ever able to get a sense? I know Matthew Gaudreau signed an AHL deal, spent a bit of time in Stockton in 2019. Did you ever get a sense what it meant to Johnny to have his younger brother, not in the same locker room, but in the same organization?
Yeah, he, I mean, they were very, very close, right? And, you know, I didn't know Matthew as well. Obviously, I'd met him several times, you know, in those early days. And I got to know Matthew more later on because, you know, in those early days when you know, Jane and Guy would come out, and the girls, usually, you know, Matthew was playing, right? So Matthew would be, he was still playing then. So, you know, when they come out and see John, you know, Matthew was playing. So I got to know him. They were very close, but he, you know, I know he was, you know, he'd always check in when he was playing. He played down in Stockton for a little bit, and John would follow the games and, you know, sort of critique. He could go on, you know, he'd go on the AHL website and watch the games, and John would go on, give him a little critique of how he played. But, I mean, they were so close, you know, they were so, so close. You know, best friends, knew those brothers, and, talked about his brother a lot. And, you know, I know when he'd go home in the summer, they, you know, they were together a lot. And, so, which just, you know, it's even part of how this, all this stuff is, but, you know, those two were, they were tight.
Tree, Last one, and I know that I know how tough this is on you, so I just really appreciate the time. Can you give us just a little bit of a sense? At the top, you said, you know, when you're getting John, you're getting the crew, and we all saw it. But can you give us a little bit of a behind the scenes of what that was like, and you know, having the crew as part of the kind of entourage at different times throughout a season?
Oh, they, you know, yeah, just thinking about Jane and Guy, they're so close. You know, it's funny because people would say to me, you know, we had some hard coaches over the, you know, guys, demanding coaches, hard coaches. And guys would say, oh, I remember when I hired Daryl, guys, people were wondering how John was going to, oh, well, John played for his dad. Yeah. Nobody was harder on John than his dad. And I remember Guy would always, whenever Guy showed up, you know, he'd be at the rink before, he'd come in with the players. He'd be in there first thing in the morning and come down for breakfast. And we'd always know that John was going to be, like, John was good every night. But when Guy was there, we always were like, okay. Because as much as John didn't want to disappoint anybody, he knew he'd get the ride after read to him when Guy was in town. And you know, that family is just, like I said, they did everything together. We were joking the other night. Brian Burke and I, so when John had his contract, so he ended his entry-level contract. If you remember, he didn't sign. He missed mm-hmm. camp that year. Mm-hmm. And it was the year of the World Cup. So as much as he was in that camp, he was playing on that Team North America team, if you guys remember that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Lewis and I are working through the contract. And near the end, you know, he says, like, well, let's get together. You know, I talked to John. He's like, well, would you come to Philly and we'll get together? I said, okay. So we go and we're at the Ritz-Carlton in Philadelphia. And we got a suite there. And here I'm thinking, you know, I'm going to meet with Lewis and John. The door knocks. And they walk. The whole family's there. John, Guy, the girls, Matt. Like, the whole family comes in. And I'm sitting down going, I mean, they're going to gang up on me here. So, but that was the Gaudreaus, right? They, you know. They had so much fun coming to Calgary. They loved coming to Calgary. You loved seeing them, you know, going to Philly. Whenever we'd go east to Philly, you know, John was always great in Philly, and you'd hear a roar when he'd score, and you'd look, there'd be all the Gaudreaus would be together. And mm-hmm. So it's, it was special. It was special seeing them. It was always special seeing them.
Thanks for getting through that, Tree. Honestly, really appreciate the time. It's so good to hear your voice. I know for so many listening, it's awesome to hear your voice as well. Be well, Tree. Thank you so much. And just be well. Good vibes from back here in Calgary, hey?
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on. And I know that city. I love that city, and I know they love their own, and they will. They're sending all their love to the Gaudreaus, and so hi to everybody back there.
Be well, hey. Thanks, Tree.
See you guys.
Thanks, Brad.
It's Brad Tree Living. Wolf, I don't think Tree has spoken on you know, Calgary radio since leaving. But and as he said off the top, he wish it was under different circumstances. But you know, having him been here for, you know, what, nine seasons, whatever it was, eight seasons.
Yeah.
You know,
him and Johnny together. For
the entire.
Yeah. Johnny played one game.
That's right.
Before he arrived.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, and just like getting to know Tree and his time here. And like, believe me, that was That was not an easy 20 minutes for him to get through. That was that was again some really powerful stuff, and the gravity of those words is very well felt. So thank you to Tree for doing that. I know that was not easy for mm-hmm. him. Yeah, really, really appreciate that. And you know, the best thing that I honestly think that, you know, in our position, many of us on the outside, not being a part of the family, but still feeling the loss, is, you know, trying to just really celebrate the family, celebrate the connection the brothers had, celebrate the two lives. And yeah, I think Tree just did an incredible job of doing just that.
Yeah, and celebrate the impact. I mean, there's a reason that this has been felt by an entire city, and quite frankly, by the NHL and the greater hockey fan base as well. And yep. So we can celebrate that impact, and we can celebrate the memories of Johnny and his family that we're left with.
Yep. Well said. Brad True Living joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. The best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs since 1975. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast, or call them at 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery.